VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Saturday morning, it's 10 o'clock. That means this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live and in color. And we will be here for 1 hour. We hope you can do the same. For all of you who are returning listeners, thank you so much. Please tell all your friends and keep coming back. We hope you learn something. And if you're new to the show, either by accident or on purpose, because you've been told about it or found us on the website or something like that, stick around for a while. We will spend the hour talking about all kinds of fun things that we want to talk about, unless, of course, you intervene by picking up the phone and calling 904-222-8255. That's 222-TALK. At which time we will always put you immediately to the head of the line, and we'll talk about what you would like to talk about. With so much going on out there, there are a lot of issues of the day. There are a lot of topics, a lot of things changing. Adam and I were just talking right before we came on. I'm going to finish up over the next couple of weeks a series on annuities, and then I'm going to slide into a new series on long-term care. Long-term care insurance is a topic that has changed a lot over the years. Some of that change is bad. But recently, the pendulum's been starting to swing back a little bit. Are there some much more interesting things evolving in the marketplace? And if it serves, which I think it will, to bring more people into some sort of coverage for long-term care, we cannot stress as financial planners enough how important that is. There is a reason that over the years I have dubbed it wealth insurance, because that's what it does. A lot of people in their last few years on the way out of this life spend an awful lot of money on things that are not covered by anything else except long-term care insurance. So if you're listening out there and your parents are getting older and you hear some things that are interesting, bring it up to them. Maybe they'll have a little more left over when the time comes for you. There is no way to get people involved except to bring it up, because I promise you, like all forms of insurance, people avoid discussions of that sort like the plague. So know it's coming up. Today we'll do a little more on annuities, but we've got a lot of other stuff to do too. Of course, I can't let it go a whole show without talking about the new tax law a little bit. There was a big thing that was introduced this week that we'll discuss. But first, I am not avoiding market discussions this week like I might have been for the last couple of weeks. And in fact, we're actually pretty excited to get into market discussions, so take it away.
Well, that was a big bounce, wasn't it?
Whoa, yeah.
And if you look at the chart, it really does look like a bounce. Starting last Friday, we saw 6 days of increases in a row.
Oh, by the way, this program is not afraid to ask the question, is all that yuckiness over? And I'm going to give you the answer right after the break.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
All right.
Okay. And we will have a trivia question, too.
So the last week, we saw declines of about 5% on all three major indexes. And this week, we saw gains of over 4.3% on all three. The NASDAQ was the clear winner, up 5.3% for the week, while the Dow and S&P both climbed 4.3%. Year to date, the S&P is now up 2.2%, the Dow 2%, and the NASDAQ is now up 4.9%. I know it doesn't feel like it because it's off its highs, but it's still... That is not a bad month and a half. I mean, 4.9%, I'll take it. QQQ, or the NASDAQ 100 ETF, is actually up more with gains of almost 6%.
Best performing asset there is right now.
It's been a real winner over the last 18 months, definitely. So small and mid-cap stocks haven't fared as well, but most of the indexes are still positive on the year, just not quite as much, between about up a hair to 2%. On a sector basis, consumer discretionary is leading the way higher, gaining over 6% this year, followed closely by technology. Energy has been lagging, down just under 6% year to date, with utilities the second worst, down almost 5% on the year. And really not surprising about consumer discretionary, when people have more money in their pocket, which is what is happening under the new tax law, they go and blow it on cheap junk. And that's what consumer discretionary
not
means.
Always cheap.
Well, that's true. Expensive junk in a lot of cases. Overseas markets were mixed also, but we did see some rebounding. Emerging markets are up 5% on the year, while Brazil's market saw big gains this week and is now up over 12% year to date.
Yeah, they didn't get there in a straight line either.
No, that's been pretty volatile.
Wow.
Commodities are mixed as well, with gold up 3.5%, while natural gas is down almost 7% on the year. Kind of the clear loser out of all asset categories, natural gas right now. I'm kind of confused by it.
You and me.
But it is what it is. Fixed income was down across the board, with the 20-year treasury down more than 6%. Well, the total bond market ETF is down just over 2%. That's BND for those that are interested. This is not surprising considering the almost certainty of interest rates going up this year, most likely starting next month.
Yeah, I'd bet a sizable amount on that.
Yeah.
Maybe as much as a cup of coffee at Starbucks.
Ooh, that's actually quite expensive.
Maybe only Dunkin' Donuts, but you know, right in there.
Not that much of a discrepancy, really.
No.
The real story of the crazy market over the last few weeks is that anyone tells you who can time the market, they're just lying. You can't do it. We still have no idea what caused this dramatic sell-off. There are tons of theories out there, but they're all just that, theories. If you sold out of SPY, the S&P 500 tracking fund, ETF, after the first 1,000-point drop on February 2nd, you would still be ahead by selling out, but not by much. The S&P closed that day at 2562, and today is at 2532, I believe.
Something
like that. It's about a 30-point difference, or about 1%. So yes, you would still be better today, but what if Monday opens up 2%? You're going to be—
Well, Monday won't open up at all.
Sorry, Tuesday. Yeah. This is a holiday. So the real story of it is, when you look at the fundamentals of the market and the economy and you see that it's strong and then you see an event like this, just ignore it. That is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, I wonder how many people failed to do that.
I bet a lot.
Yeah. It was scary.
When
you see 1,000-point drops happening a couple times in a week,
right?
You have trouble because of the magnitude of the number, not because of the percentage drop, but the magnitude of the number itself, I think, has a much more psychological impact on people.
Absolutely. Sometimes that's why it's better to track the S&P rather than the Dow, because
right.
The Dow is just 30 stocks. It really
isn't. I know. The Dow is so much fun to watch, but it's not the market.
No, 30, not even close.
30 stocks. And being weighted the way it is, if it's, for instance, Amazon that has a good or a bad day, it distorts the whole picture.
Absolutely.
Now, they've done it that way forever. It is up to the consumer to understand what the Dow actually is. It is not the market.
No, and not even a decent representation. It's actually terrible.
But it's 25,219 right now, and the S&P, which is a much better look at the market, is only 2,732. Which one of those is more fun to talk about?
Of course. The 1,000 points is exciting. And
for us as well as anybody else.
No doubt.
So you do what you do. I'm actually going to answer the question. Is this mess over? And the answer is, I will tell you exactly how bad it was or is in about 3 or 4 months. That's the answer.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah,
if anybody expected anything other than that, you're never going to get it from here. I'll tell you that.
Now,
no one knows. In fact, our trivia question today has to do with that. That's why I brought it up. In recent corrections, which means 10% or larger drop, the new highs in the market were back in 40 days. Not bad, huh?
No, not bad at all.
Is it possible we'll do that this time?
Of course.
Possible we'll beat that.
Could be less, yeah.
But remember 2000? There was a correction in 2000. Remember when the NASDAQ plummeted and all that? How long did it take for that to correct in years? And I'll take it plus or minus one. How about that? Don't go anywhere. We'll be back right after a short break. This is the Banway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Banway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Banway.
And I'm Adam Banway.
And our trivia question, once again, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 636-7888. And, of course, that's area code 904. Recent corrections, like we just suffered through, meaning 10% drop or more, have produced a rather rapid recovery where new highs were reached in 40 days after the correction. But back in 2000, things weren't quite that accommodating for investors. How many years did it take the correction in 2000 to recover? And we'll take that answer in plus or minus 1 year. All right, we've got a lot more to talk about in the market because there is cause and effect. This is not a good market by accident. This is a good market on purpose because what drives the markets truly, when all the smoke and mirrors are gone, what drives it is the economy. So you want to see how the economy's doing? Adam's got some stats for you.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the earnings season. It's almost over, which means that most companies have already reported. There isn't that many left, and it looks, I mean, nothing short of fantastic. The normal pattern for earnings is that when they first start coming out, the beat rate for earnings and for revenues starts out high, and then as more companies report, it typically declines. We've seen that over the last at least four quarters. I think we've seen that same pattern. This time, not so much. This quarter, it started out high, and it's remained high. The earnings beat rate has been pretty steady at about 70%, and the revenue beat rate is even higher than that. It's 72.7%. If you just look at companies in the S&P 500, the rates are even higher, with the earnings beat rate standing at about 80%. So that is a number that you just don't see very often.
No, you got to go back to,
oh,
I looked it up this morning. Yeah, right in there. Right before the big crash, which I'm not saying anything of a correlation or worse yet, a causation.
So for the bulk of the recovery, we saw revenue beat rates around 50%, and many times those were on diminished expectations. And for it to stand at 70% today on raised expectations is makes it all the more impressive. And we haven't even seen the benefit of the tax cuts yet. This is from quarter four of last year where it was not in place. So, man, I'm looking forward to the first quarter of this year. It's going to be,
you and me.
It should be pretty good. On a sector basis, 80% of healthcare companies have beat their earnings targets, while just 50% of energy and telecom companies have posted better than expected numbers. And technology is the highest, second highest sector at just over 76%. We saw a bunch of economic data come out this week, and it was a little more mixed than it's been lately, although there were more positive reports than negative reports, but there was some downside to it, which is surprising, to say the least. The retail sales report was just awful.
But look what happened at Christmas.
Really, yeah, that's true, but still, I don't think anyone really expected that. It was supposed to go up 0.2%, but it actually fell 0.3%, so that's
For a revision, too, though.
We'll see. But they also revised down December.
Yeah, true.
So it was pretty ugly. The inflation data, or the CPI, came in stronger than expected, but inflation is still relatively low at less than 2%. The growth in inflation is accelerating, though, and I think that'll continue. So is that a bad thing? In some ways, yes, and others, no. Inflation in wages, we need it really badly. People need to make more money. It's been wages have been stagnant over the recovery, and that's actually kind of unusual.
Starting, but it's not ramping up fast enough to suit me.
Exactly. Inflation in goods and services, that is not necessarily a good thing for the consumer because we all end up paying more for those things, but it's good for companies that are providing those. It grows their top line revenue. So at this point, I'd put the higher inflation in the good category, even though there is some downside to it. And for the first time in a long time, this was really interesting. The number one issue facing small businesses isn't taxes and government regulation. Any guess what it is?
I didn't read that.
Okay. It was labor, quality of labor.
That's been sliding up
quickly. Got to number one.
You finally made it, huh?
Yep. So that also supports the theory that there should be some wage inflation because when companies can't find good people, they have to pay more in order to attract talent. So I think that we should start seeing some wage inflation this year, some much-needed wage inflation.
One of the articles that I printed out a few weeks ago, and I had it labeled under my lunacy pile.
Mm-hmm.
It says, why the job market threatens to turn too hot for comfort in 2018. And I haven't talked about it because every week I'm inching closer to crossing off lunacy and call it prognostication. I think if we don't get more people re-entering the workforce, you are going to see a pretty substantial increase in labor rates because there are shortages turning up already. A lot of it created, in all fairness, by natural disasters, because now you've got the plumbers, carpenters, and electricians and so on really, really busy rebuilding a bunch of things. But the general market also. So if you have been out of the job seeking, which we know a lot of you have because the participation rate has been so low, it's time to get back out there. You might have a really good time.
Might be pleasantly surprised what's available right now.
Yeah. In fact, I'm going to go so far as to cross off my lunacy on that one and put it in the other pile.
All right.
Could happen. You know, never know. I wanted to talk a little bit, too, about all the spending that's been going on. We saw some things happen, and we saw some things not happen. In other words, business as usual in D.C.
Why is it that the only thing that Republicans and Democrats can agree on is spending more tax dollars?
I don't know.
It's
yes, I do.
It's amazing.
It truly is. They're just not going to ever change as far as I can tell. We have to change them because they won't change. But anyway, there's only three ways that you can get out of the debt hole that we're in. One would be to start collecting more money than we're spending. And we hope to be collecting a little more soon. But the spending part of that will always outpace it. So, in other words, that's just not going to happen.
Not going to happen, no.
So then there's a part about we make a major default on our debt.
No.
That's not going to happen.
No.
That would cause problems beyond. Well, what it would do is get everybody in Congress fired. Therefore, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
Right? That simple. And the third one is you print your money and just keep printing and printing and printing, which will get you there, but it's going to cause inflation. So I am an inflation bull. I want some. The question is, how much can we sustain? Now, this tax cut, if it provides a big enough bump to GDP, if we get a 1-point overall long-term bump in the GDP, the so-called $1.5 trillion extra debt that we're going to incur will go away, and we'll repay that much more out of that one. So will it happen? All of the indicators that we can find right now are that it's well on the way to happening. There are a lot of forecasts now for the GDP in the first quarter to be a number possibly even greater than 5.
Well, actually, that came down a little this week.
They're
thinking more like
something.
4, yeah.
Well, that's pretty widely accepted to be the sweet spot anyway. So let's see what happens. Meanwhile, good morning, George.
Yes, good morning, guys. If the city wants to pay off its $3 to $5 billion, which we put into the football team, which you know I wanted to have the football team,
sure.
What would you tax? Which one of these two industries would you tax because they have more money invested and there's more money moving around? The electric industry or the telecommunications?
Boy, that's a loaded question, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's telecommunication. If you and Amazon and you know all of these people who use the internet, and I think we should do temporarily, which you know for maybe 3 to 5 years, what some cities out west have done. Anytime you add sidewalks, make sure there's some holes in the sidewalks to run the telecommunication cables, and then work with local contractors, the big guys, the small guys who also supply the systems and charge them a fee to use those cables.
I can poke a hole in that one very easily since it's something of a user fee and would benefit everybody. So why not? It would take some coordination, but I've had a problem all my life with the monopoly status that was granted to things like the cable companies, and I just don't understand why we can't get more competition out there. Yes, somebody's
right.
Got to lay the lines and that sort of thing. Somebody's got to pay for it. But then there ought to be some kind of a leasing program or something where we can spur competition in those areas.
Absolutely. Well, I'm proposing that we do exactly that, that different companies coming into the business can use those same lines.
Yeah.
And they just lease part of the bandwidth. And maybe you have 5 holes there in the sidewalk and some places like New York City put it all in one big ditch, but that's about $1 million a mile. That's ridiculous. And the water would have to be separate and the drain lines. But we certainly could do the telecommunications very easily. It won't freeze. You just make sure this it's not going to break. With if one thing moves, you need to have a kind of a transition, a little pipey thing. But I think that's the way the city should go instead of selling JA off.
Well, I like it, and I think if we started a sinking fund to get rid of that debt, it would be nice. I'm still curious to see how it goes bailing us out of the pension problem, too. This city's got a lot of financial troubles, and I hope it comes up with some creative ways. And I know you, George, you'll be on their case.
That's right. Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself. Good to hear from you.
All right.
George, longtime friend of the show, and an interesting guy with a wonderful background in all kinds of things. And he's a thinker and comes up with ideas and solutions. And I wish he'd run for office, frankly. But, all right. Anyway, we got to take a little break. Lines are ringing again, so we'll pick up somebody new right after the break. Meanwhile, don't go anywhere. We'll talk about a lot of things when we get back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Van Wee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this is Marshall. Good morning, Marshall.
Beach Boy, how we doing?
If we were any better, there'd have to be two of us. Oh, wait,
awesome.
There are two of us.
Oh, there are.
Oh, then we're great. What's happening?
I sincerely appreciate the education I get each day y'all are on. Because there's some of these numbers that we just don't seem to grasp. And you've mentioned one, and I would hope maybe you could clarify a little deeper, and I've got another one for you.
Fire it up.
The two numbers are, you mentioned something about what a 1% growth in the GDP would mean potentially in government revenue to pay down debt, et cetera.
Yep.
And the second one is, on one of these news breaks during the week, I heard something about January federal tax revenue versus expenditures had this large, large surplus.
That is true.
It actually is true.
I saw that as well.
There are reasons for it.
So I thought maybe y'all could kind of give us more than the, you know, the headline news comment on those two items, if you don't mind.
Happy to.
And I'll listen off the air since I'm out here in the world.
Okay, do you want to take a shot at the trivia before you go?
Oh, yeah, was it, how about a lucky number 7?
Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, we have a winner. You didn't even need the plus or minus 1 on that one. It took 7 years for that one to recover, and it certainly had some reasons for it, like 9/11 happened right after that.
Well, and it was the run-up on that was based on nothing.
Yeah, if you remember the 90s and the internet coming into the homes and the QQQ and all those dot-com this and that, they all started falling apart in March of 2000, which led us down a big, ugly path that we didn't want to do again, but it took a long time. I know how to find you in the mail, so we won't have to worry about putting you on hold. So we'll talk about your subjects. Thank you. I appreciate you calling.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's start a little bit with the... Now, I looked this morning. I tried to verify this number, but I've heard it about 10 times from people who know what they're talking about, that if the GDP goes up 1% and stays that way over the 10-year period in which we do our budgeting, it means that we'll get an extra $3 trillion of revenue. But the tax cut that was meant mostly to stimulate the growth in GDP is $1.5 trillion over that same time. So the cost, so to speak, of the tax cut should be negative $1.5 trillion if it continues to work the way it appears to be working so far. Now, it isn't too hard to conceive of a time frame where it would actually go up 1.5 to 2, which would mean somewhere in the 4.5 to 6, perhaps, trillion-dollar payback, which I know on a $20 trillion debt is not all that much. But the point is, if we started going the right direction, our credit rating would be so much better, and the price of money, which you can call the interest rate, will be a lot less. And whenever that comes down, it has the ancillary benefit of also reducing the strain on the current deficits and therefore long-term debt. So that number alone, if this works the way it should, and it always has, and yeah, I know past results are not a true indicator of future results and all that stuff that you always hear. Point is, tax cuts have always worked until Congress gets in there and they start messing with them. You add a bracket here. You add a point here. You do this, you do that, you take away this, take away that. They can't stop messing with the tax code. They have to if it's working. So will it happen? I'm not 100% sure. That's point one. What was point two? I'm over 65.
Point two was the January surplus in tax revenue.
Yeah.
Overspending.
Well, I'll let you espouse more on this, but one of the things that I always look at is the four taxation months where quarterly payments mm-hmm. and or annual payments are made, April 15th,
right.
June 15th, September 15th, January.
You mean the quarterlies that aren't due every quarter?
Well, the people who pay in their own.
Right, but one quarter is 2 months
yeah,
and
exactly.
one's 4 months.
Yeah.
Makes
yeah.
no sense.
Well, the only reason they do that is so they can end their fiscal year on a higher note.
Right.
I promise you, folks, it is no deeper than that. September 30th is the cutoff. That should be October 15th, but they love that increased revenue in September because the government doesn't use accrual-based accounting. They use cash-based accounting. And why can they do that and we can't? Because
the
they don't pay taxes.
And that's they're the why. Government. They make
yes.
the rules. So.
So they do that. They punish all of us who have to pay in quarterly by charging us twice in one quarter. Then we get it all back just in time for Christmas. Isn't that special? And then January 15th, you got another one due. So that's my first point, that January is one of the 4 months when you would be most likely
yeah.
to have a cash surplus.
Yeah, definitely.
And go into it more?
I don't expect that we'll see that in February. I think that was you nailed it. January is a high revenue month for the government because of that very issue. I just don't see any other reason. There's no way that we don't run a deficit this year.
No. A big one.
That was a double negative, but you know what I mean.
Yes, and your double negative came out exactly right. I would imagine that April will be an astounding month.
Yeah, it probably will.
And remember, what's being paid in January wasn't based on this year. That was the fourth payment for 2017.
Right.
If you are doing your estimated taxes for this year, the first one is due April 15th. Now, if you think you're going to make more money this year, for instance, your small business or whatever, you are going to up those estimates. And that means you're going to pay in more money every quarter, which is really going to provide another good bump in April. Or let's say you've been out of the workforce for a long time. You go back to work and you start doing odd jobs or start a little company or whatever. You're making some money for a change. Doing your quarterlies, a lot of that's going to take place in April. I bet you April's going to be the best deficit-reducing temporary month in years, I would think.
Yeah, and then I bet May will just make
yeah.
up for that.
Yeah, exactly. But because revenues spike and go down, you should expect that. It's not a surprise to me that that happens. The only surprise I want to see is by how much it happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch this year and see how that works.
And
because you're also, even though you're making more money, you're projecting your taxes at a lower rate. So are they going to go up?
Well, you know, that's a very good point, too. That should be offset a bit.
I'm not sure.
Well, we'll have to see.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, it might take till about the second show in May when we actually have the accounting done on that. So we'll bring it to you, of course. Why not? All right, I've got a couple minutes before we have to go on break. One of the things I wanted to talk about was there was something in the air this week. There was some real lunacy going on out there, and you know how much I love that. So on Thursday, I was listening to the TV and reading emails and stuff like that, and I thought, oh, my God, it's just crazy out there. So I just jotted down a few things just from Thursday, and this was after a bad week, but we had gained 1,009 points in 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So on Cavuto, somebody said, I don't even know who it was, I don't see any evidence that we're entering a bear market. To which I responded, really? After 1,009 yeah, points in 3 days so far this week?
Amazing insight.
And the market being up on Thursday. And then there was this one. Apple faces a long, slow decline. Anybody see what Warren Buffett did this week?
I purchased more Apple. It was up substantially this
3%
week.
3% one day.
Yeah, I saw that.
And before this was written. Here we go with another one. Advisors, be afraid. Robots are coming after your jobs.
I mean, that is actually true. They're not coming after our jobs, but there is a whole new industry that's evolved in advising called robo-advisors.
Yeah, and those are for young people getting started who don't have much money. If you want to deal with someone who can understand a lot more than just a few investments, you've got to deal with somebody like us, certified financial planners. All right, next one. Doomsday chart warns of global disaster.
Uh-oh.
I think that was a reprint from each of the last 200 months. Biggest currency reboot in 100 years could sweep America.
Uh-oh.
Don't you love headlines that have the word could in them? I do. The price of crude oil is dropping like a sunk oil tanker. Of course, crude was up 11.2% in the last 3 months. This patent-pending crypto could net you $25,000 in profits. On how much? I don't know. Don't go anywhere. It's the Van Wee Financial Hour.
Let's get back to the Van Wee Financial Hour on AM 600 and FM 100.3, The Answer. To be a part of the program, call 222-TALK. That's 222-8255. Once again, here's Stephen and Adam Van Wee.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. Things are starting to grow out there. It's getting a little warmer. Nights are better. Give Troy a call at 662-9794. We haven't talked too much, or I'll rephrase that. We haven't talked enough about us today. Don't turn off your radios. Come on. We do have day jobs, and we do have a nice little business out at the end of Butler in Jacksonville Beach. And for those of you who might be interested in talking to someone who is not a robot, who doesn't only deal with simplistic problems in finance or investing, but rather does a comprehensive look at your entire life, we would be among the people you might want to take a look at, and Adam will tell you how.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. You can either visit us in the office, as my dad mentioned. We're right off of Butler Boulevard and Marsh Landing Parkway out at the beach. Easy to get to from everywhere in the city. You can always give us a call, 904-685-1505, or the easiest way is online at vanweefinancial.com. You can book a meeting with us right from our website. You can hear, we hope you never miss a show, but if you do, the podcast replays are always available on our site or on iTunes or Stitcher or any of the other podcast websites that you might use. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Van Wee Financial, Twitter at Van Wee Financial, or if you're just not the type of person that likes to call a show but you have a question, just shoot us an email at info@vanweefinancial.com and we will read your question and answer it on air.
That is true. We've done that many times. Well, 17 years or so I've been in this business, and I can truly say that in all that time I have never recommended that someone purchase a variable annuity. There is a good reason for that, and it's not necessarily the variable annuity or even the industry. It's generally that there's a much better way to do things. On the other hand, many times over 17 years, people have come to see us looking forward to doing business with us, and they have among their assets a variable annuity. Most of them do not understand their variable annuities. Frankly, I can see why. It is not a simple subject.
No, it's not. Annuities in general are sometimes difficult to understand, and variable makes it even more so.
Yep. I remember one several years ago that came in after a call to the radio show. He said, I just bought a variable annuity, and I want to know what I've got, and I'm not feeling very good about it. It was kind of oversold, as most of them are. And at that point, I always think, you know, he's lying. He doesn't just buy it. So I said, well, how long have you had the contract in your hand? He said, it came yesterday. I said, good. Make an appointment for Monday morning. Come in and see me. So we took a look at it, decided it had been a very poor purchase, and the purchase was made because of a sales pitch that, of course, had very little to do with reality. But every annuity sold in the state of Florida has what they call a free look period. So you can simply return it to the seller within, I think they're 30 days now. It varies from area to area. You got 20 or 30 days, something like that. So when you get one, if you're uncomfortable with it, know that you can take it back. So our first question is always, how long have you had it? Well, a lot of people have had them for years and don't really know too much about what they actually have. So then you look at, what have you got? First thing I'll ask them then is, well, have you read it? No. I am one of the very few people that have ever read a full variable annuity contract from cover to cover. And Adam was another one. And I'm telling you, it is complicated. And it's not really very exciting, but it's very important. Anyway, we've been dealing with a couple of them just lately. And there's a strange thing that happens in these variable annuities. And I'm speechless trying to figure out how they get away with it. That's the bottom line. But first off, there are some good ones. I want to predicate everything with this. There are some older variable annuities, particularly those sold in the 70s and 80s, that have what they call a guaranteed minimum value on them. When these have been around long enough that the underlying values inside the annuity, a lot of them have really tanked. So how do you know if you've got one of the good ones? Well, here's your first clue. If you've ever been approached by the company or by the salesman to see if you want to turn it in on a new, better annuity, it's your first clue, folks. You've got a good one because they want it back. They want it out of your hands. 100% of the time that we see those, we tell them to just keep it aside, put it in a safe deposit box or wherever you want it, probably scan it. Make sure you got the records on it, and keep it. Do not ever sell one back to the company who wants it, because that's just a sure sign that it's better for them, better for you than them. It's better for them to get it back. So let's say you've got one of the more recent ones, and most people do. They're not usually that good if they're fairly new. So what do we do about them? Well, first off, the problem I was alluding to a bit ago, inside most variable annuities, there is a life insurance product that they don't tell you about. It's called the mortality expense in there. Most people are paying life insurance on their money that's inside that variable annuity. That's the part I've never been able to figure out exactly how they get away with. Since your money's there anyway, why are you paying to ensure that money will be there if you die? It's there, is it not? So anyway, what happens to a mortality expense? Anybody who's ever dealt with life insurance knows one thing. The older you are, the higher it gets. So every year, you're sitting on this variable annuity, and your returns are being bled off internally more and more by the increasing mortality cost inside it. It doesn't have to be that way. We use a product called Jefferson National Life, the Monument Series, and it is especially designed for fee-only people like us. There are no commissions on the product. Jefferson National makes a flat $20 a month on it. And, full disclosure, they use regular old mutual funds that you can buy in your brokerage accounts or your IRAs directly from the people that we use all the time. They do have an arrangement where they get a small piece of that from these people. That is not added on to what you pay. It is not added on to what you get. It's paid by the company to them to encourage the use, and it's very small. But the big thing is, the money in there doesn't require you to insure it to have it. It's your money. So by the time you strip out the mortality cost, which goes up all the time. You get better mutual funds at less cost, and you don't pay any commissions. There's no surrender period. You're in 100% control of your money. You can take out as much as you want when you want. You can have it in an IRA. You can have it in a brokerage account or just held. It does not matter how you hold it. And there is a little comparison thing on the website. We can take your VA, variable annuity, and we can compare it to the Jefferson National product, and it will show you to the penny how much money you can save. Well, if you are in the period of time that variable annuities have, which is called the surrender period, which means they're paying the broker the commission that he made by selling it, if you're still in that period, it will tell you how long you've got to pay that, how much it is, and it will recalculate for you how much money you're going to save during that period and beyond. Now, a lot of times, if somebody's got $10,000 or $20,000 worth of commission that is still left unpaid by virtue of the surrender charge, they are reluctant to give up the policy, and who could blame them? On the other hand, if that policy is going to save you $100,000 over the next 5 or 10 years, then maybe that seems like a small price to pay. So if you have a variable annuity, you don't know much about them, and you ever want it looked at, you can give us a call and bring them in, and we'll help you read through it, understand what you've got. If you got a keeper, we'll tell you you got a keeper. If not, we'll suggest a change for it. They are not good for most people. I have said for many, many years that annuities are mostly sold rather than being bought. What that means is the answer, if you go to the salesman, here's the attitude you'll get. The answer is an annuity. Now, what was your question? So if you're one of the unfortunate ones who got locked into that at some point in time, know that there's a way out of it, and it is well within the ethics of being a fee-only business like ours. So just something to know. I'll do a little bit more on annuities next week, and I probably will start introducing the term of the hybrid long-term care product by virtue of annuities, because that's how they got started, but they're getting even better. So the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about some really interesting things for us older people who want to protect their wealth into the next generation. All right, well, that wraps it up for today. I hope everybody enjoyed it. We certainly did. We'll see you next week at the same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.